welcome and good evening to another edition of Quest Youth Radio, better known as Quest Community Vibration, also the best youth radio. And now, without any further ado, I'd like to give you our introduction. And just so you know, music, like poetry, has a method, and history, like a diamond, shines clear to the truth. Words have meaning that we can comprehend, like definition. And news can create a chain of events that we may not always understand. Now pull back the curtain and see the real contributions, and you will find our Quest moment, where we will attempt tonight to make wave vibrations. So thank you once again for joining us to hear a different perspective of our diaspora. Without any further ado, I'd like to introduce you to one of our panel guests, which is normally with us on Saturday in the daytime. Mr. Harris, how are you?
I'm good. Peace to everyone.
Yeah. Basically, we're waiting for our student host to chime in, Mr. Walter Pierce. And this is why I've called upon you. And let me just say that tonight we're going to highlight John Lewis, Stacey Abrams, and the Voting Rights Act. And Walter is going to present his format and give insight of his perspective and relate it to our diaspora today. And without any further ado, Walter Pierce.
Yes, and I want to wish everybody a good evening and welcome to the show. And again, like he said, I have two diamonds on set for today, which is Stacey Abrams and John Lewis, both huge contributors to America and people who love America and people who are involved in politics for America. And to start off, I want to start off with the out there, which is John Lewis, God rest his soul, you know. John Lewis, John Lewis is an amazing has been an amazing contribution to the country, America. And, you know, he's somebody who even quoted saying he loves it and he wants to continue the fight of social injustice and civil rights for his people, and also voting, because again, he was involved in politics. Now, John Lewis was the son of Alabama sharecroppers. He attended segregated schools and was encouraged by his parents not to challenge the inequalities of the Jim Crow South. As a teenager, however, he was inspired by courageous defiance of Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King Jr., to whose attention came when he indicated his desire to desegregate Troy State College, now Troy University. Dissuaded from doing so by his parents, Lewis instead was educated in Nashville at the American Baptist Theological Institute and Fisk University. There, Lewis undertook the study of nonviolent protest and became involved in sit-ins at lunch counters and other segregated public places. In 1961, while participating in the Freedom Rides that challenged the segregation of Southern interstate bus terminals, Lewis was beaten and arrested, experiences he would repeat often. In 1963, he was elected to replace Chuck McDougall as the chairman of the SNCC, a position he held until 1966, when he was succeeded by Stokely Carmichael, as the organization took a more militant direction. Also in 1963, Lewis played a key role in the historic March on Washington. Indeed, by that point, Lewis, though still in his early 20s, had already become such a prominent figure that he was considered one of the civil rights movement's big six leaders, along with King, James Farmer, A. Philip Randolph, Roy Wilkins, and Whitney Young. 1964, Lewis headed the SNCC's effort to register African American voters and organize communities in Mississippi during the Freedom Summer Project. On March 7, 1965, Lewis played a pivotal role in one of the most important events in the history of the American Civil Rights Movement when he and King Lieutenant Hosea Williams led some 600 peaceful protesters on a march in support of voting rights that departed from Selma, with the capital in Montgomery, Alabama, as the destination. At the beginning of the march, while still in Selma, as they attempted to cross the Edmund Pettus Bridge over the Alabama River, the protesters were confronted by a large force of sheriff deputies, state troopers, and disgruntled men who had been authorized by Alabama's segregationist Governor George Wallace to take whatever means necessary to prevent the march. Given 2 minutes to disperse, the marchers were almost immediately set upon. They were quickly doused with tear gas, overrun by horses, and attacked with bullets and billy clubs. As a result of the brutal assault, more than 50 marchers were hospitalized, including Lewis, whose skull was fractured, but who spoke to television reporters before going to the hospital. And he called on President Lyndon B. Johnson to take action in Alabama. Millions of American television viewers witnessed the event, which became known as the Bloody Sunday, and within 48 hours, demonstrations in support of the marches had taken place in some 80 American cities. The results heightened awareness and would contribute mightily to the passage of the landmark Voting Rights Act, which was signed into law by Johnson on August 1965. After leaving the SNCC, Lewis, who had made his home in Atlanta, remained active in the civil rights movement, most notably as the director of the Voter Education Project. In 1977, a fellow Georgia president, Jimmy Carter, put Lewis in charge of action. The umbrella federal volunteer agency that included the Peace Corps and volunteers in service to America. Lewis entered elective office as the Atlantic City Councilman in 1981 and in 1986, and began representing the district that including Atlanta in the U.S. House of Representatives. In addition to numerous other honors he received, Lewis was awarded the Martin Luther King Jr. Nonviolent Peace Prize in 1975, the John F. Kennedy Profile and Courage Award in 2001, and the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People's Spingarn Award, in 2002. In 2011, he received the Presidential Medal of Freedom. His memoirs are Walking with the Wind and March and the March Trilogy. His final installment in the series of books, he received numerous honors, which included the National Book Award, and Lewis and Aiden shared a Coretta Scott Book Award in 2017. And, of course, in July 2020, just a couple months ago, he passed away from pancreatic cancer. But a thing I want to point out as I conclude this article is, even before he died, that's the same year, he was still out there fighting and marching in these protests that were taking place during that time. Because, of course, during that time period a couple months ago, a lot of protests was occurring dealing with Black Lives Matter, police brutality, and things of that nature. And he was still out there marching on Washington, organizing different marches and leading them and showing the youth how it's supposed to be done. So just somebody you could say who was a very courageous and a person who really loved his people until the day he died. He was still committed to fighting And that just shows the commitment he has for equal rights in America. Thank you.
Okay. So why did you choose John Lewis?
I chose John Lewis because, you know, just during this time period, you just, of course, even after the presidential election that just occurred, no matter what side you're on, you know, you always want to hear about somebody who was all about progression for especially the voting rights, which people in America of color didn't get the full opportunity to experience until really 1965. And, you know, before that, it was always all these obstacles they try to put in place, which included they had literacy tests, poll taxes, all these things that just discouraged people of color from voting. They put that into place during that time period. So just somebody who understood the situation and wanted to fight so that Voting Rights Act in 1965 could finally be passed by Lyndon B. Johnson, which he was the lead of to help get passed. And even after, he still wasn't satisfied with all the results, so he continued to participate in these marches because it wasn't just about voting. It wasn't just about politics. It was also about his people, which he cared about the most, and brought a great voice to Congress, as he has done. And you just have to commend somebody like John Lewis for the work he has done in society.
I have to ask you a question because of the present day time. We have a lot of young people who have you ever heard anybody make any derogatory statement about John Lewis?
I have to ask. No. I've never heard anybody say anything bad about him.
Okay. Let me get Mr. Harrison on this. Mr. Harris, have you ever heard any derogatory statements about John Lewis?
Well, not from the people from his side of the street. But, you know, there's always been people who want to say something, you know, because he was Southern, he didn't speak as eloquently as some people might have thought. So they equated that Southern drawl with unintelligence, which really was never the case with this brother, you know. But other than that, he was, you know, some, you know, just like when it came to Muhammad Ali, you know, people in the dominant society, they love fighters. You know, they might hate you, but they'll respect somebody that fights for their cause. And John Lewis definitely was one of those people. From his, like Walter was saying, from the time he was a teenager, you know, he starts seeing that maybe we need to do something a little different. We got to stop following the path that everybody else has. And he was a great pick. Wonderful article. And there's really nothing I can say bad about him. Let me put it like that.
Oh, no. This wasn't about you, but I just had to ask. And I did ask because I've actually heard black people actually make derogatory statements about John Lewis, which I had to dismiss immediately. And the reason why I bring it up is because there are some people that come from a different generation that just happen to be black, and they don't realize the heavy-hitting people that he surrounded himself with and the sacrifices that he made. You know, the derogatory statement was trying to paint a picture of him being submissive and easygoing. And I remember I heard Amiri Baraka speak at a march, and he mentioned that Martin Luther King, a lot of people took him in the beginning to be very soft because he practiced nonviolence. And what he said, and he admitted to having that viewpoint himself at some point. But as time changed, he realized how intelligent Martin Luther King was and how ahead of his time Martin Luther King was. And he said that how could we fight this oppression from this country? And they have all the tanks, the military, all the guns. So to pick up arms and try to fight against the establishment would be foolish and in vain. And in fact, the only way to fight oppression would be through nonviolence. And we know how successful it is, and to this day, we're still talking about it. I turn it back to you, Walter.
Yeah, just a clue on this segment on John Lewis, I believe it was something like earlier in his life where he had, I think there's something wrong with his speaking, and I guess a speech impediment he had that probably people pointed out on him, but it was still something that you shouldn't really hold against him too much, because he definitely was a very outspoken person who still fought for what he believed in. I don't understand why those things would be said about him. I've never really heard too much bad about him as compared as what you did, but at the end of the day, he still was a very important person to our history. And now to move on to our second segment, diamond actually of today, which is somebody who shares some similarities, I guess, to John Lewis in some ways. It is Representative Stacey Abrams. And see, Stacey Abrams is the House Minority Leader for the Georgia General Assembly and State Representative for the 89th House District. She is the first woman to lead either party in the Georgia General Assembly and is the first African American to lead in the House of Representatives. Stacey serves on the following committees: Appropriations, Ethics, Judiciary, Non-Civil Rules and Ways and Means. She co-founded and acts as Senior Vice President of Now Accounts Network Corporation, a financial service firm. Stacey also co-founded Nourish Incorporation, a beverage company with a focus on infant and toddlers, as well as other entrepreneurial ventures. Formerly, she was Deputy City Attorney for the City of Atlanta. Prior to her tenure at the city, she was Special Tax Counsel at Sutherland with a focus on tax-exempt organizations, healthcare, and public finance. In 2012, Stacey received the prestigious John F. Kennedy New Frontier Award, which honors an elected official under 40 whose work demonstrates the impact of elected public service as a way to address public challenges. Stacey has been recognized nationally as one of the 12 rising legislators to watch by Governing Magazine and one of the top 100 most influential Georgians by Georgia Trend for 2012 to 2013. She has been honored as a Legislator of the Year by the Chamber of Commerce, Outstanding Public Service by the Latin American American Association, and Champion for Georgia Cities by the Georgia Municipal Association, as Legislator of the Year by the DeKalb County Chamber of Commerce. She received the Georgia Legislative Service Award from the Young Democrats of Georgia and the Red Clay Democrats, an Environmental Leader Award from the Georgia Conservation Voters, and she was also Grand Champion for the Legislative Livestock Roundup at the Georgia State Fair. Stacey is a former term member of the Council on Foreign Relations, a Next Generation Fellow of the American Assembly at Columbia University on U.S. Global Policy and the Future of International Institutions, an American Marshall Memorial Fellow, an American Council of Young Political Leaders Fellow, and a Council of Italy Fellow, a British American Project Fellow, and a Freeman Fellow on the U.S. East Asian Relations. Stacy was inducted into the Academy of Women Achievers by the YMCA of Metro Atlanta and was chosen by the Womenetics as the 2011 PAV winner and by Atlanta's Women's Magazine as one of its 25 power women to watch. She has published articles on issues of public policy, taxation, and nonprofit organizations, including pieces with the Christian Science Monitor, Yale Law and Policy Review, U.S. News World Reports, and the Huffington Post. Stacy currently serves as the Board of Trustees for Agnes Scott College, the Board of Directors for the Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee, the Board of Directors for the Gateway Center for the Homeless, and the Advisory Boards for Literacy Action and Health Students Taking Action Together. She received her JD from Yale Law School, and she graduated from the LBJ School of Public Affairs at the University of Texas at Austin with the MP in Public Policy. She also earned a bachelor's in the Interdisciplinary Studies, Political Science, Economies, and Sociology from Spelman College, magna cum laude upper class. And those were just most of the accomplishments that Stacey Abrams has accomplished over her career. Of course, she's still living, and she currently serves in Georgia. And, you know, the reason I just picked her especially for today is because even though a lot of people probably are still getting to learn about her, I think in coming years she's going to be well-known and get to a point where she is known all around the country. And people are actually going to start to support what she pushes, because she does. She supports the different things she supports for the people, especially for people who are less fortunate, you could say, and people of color as well. Some of the things she is trying to put in place, and she is somebody that you could see in the future also probably as a possible presidential candidate in the coming future. You know, some of the how much she was able to have an impact, I guess, on this year's election as it dealt with Georgia, because as people say, Georgia is really blue right now. It's Democratic, and her being a Democrat as well, how much of an impact she has had in pushing the campaign and swapping Georgia this year, which probably surprised many people. I don't know if y'all also heard about Stacey Abrams as well, but do you believe that she also has a potential of being a possible U.S. candidate in the future for president?
Mr. Harris.
Oh, yeah, well, she actually ran for governor of Georgia in the last election and just barely lost because of the problems that she's focusing on now through voter suppression. And from the time that she lost that election till this time, till today, she kind of registered almost 800,000 people in the state of Georgia, which was very instrumental in Georgia being turned blue for this presidential election. And there's a chance that they can get two more senators sent to Congress from Georgia, mainly from a lot of stuff that she was doing. And she's a very, very influential, and she's still young. She's still a young sister. She's not like over the hill or anything. She has plenty of time. If she has aspirations to do things larger on the outside of Georgia, if there's any way I can have a, you know, I work with her. But, you know, she's a very powerful sister, and she deserves all the accolades and all the attention that she's getting. She deserves every minute.
Walter.
Yeah, and I agree with everything you said. That was the point I was trying to make as well. You know, somebody who has previously lost in the last election to governor of Georgia, but I'm still in belief that if you just give her a couple years as well, she could be somebody who was known all around the country and a possible U.S. candidate in the future. And that was the end of that segment for Diamonds. And now I just want to go into a more broader discussion and just talk about voting in general. You know, in this show, we don't try to talk too much on politics and which side you're on, but just we try to focus more on the social and economic issues of our people. And, you know, a big thing that's been talked about that I've been hearing is also the voting rights of people being stripped away, and it's being as bad as it was decades ago. I've heard a couple people talk about that as well. You know, I still have my views on it that I don't believe it's like that. I don't believe it's as bad and it's being as limited as it was, I guess, back in the 60s and earlier than that. And my reason is because, you know, it's been a lot of push in the media about voting and also the importance for signing up and voting and being pushed to people of our communities, of minority communities, especially in the different things we participate in, you know, things like social media, which a lot of people are in, and a lot of people who probably was on social media probably wasn't even registered or thought about it. And once you go on most social media apps, they give you immediately, like once you see it, they give you something always talking about voting and how you could sign up and how you could go register and get involved in all of these different things, which is something that I believe has contributed a lot to the progress and the more votes being taken in, especially for this year's election. And also what I wanted to touch on is also just this TV and people who've already been successful, who already are successful, and people of high stature that people look up to as role models, pushing voting. And that's also been a key contribution. But then I also see things like people believe that it's being talked about too much. And, you know, why is everything political? Why does everything have to be so political? You know, I see a lot. Why does sports have to turn more political? Why do we have to include these things in everything we do? And, you know, I just look at those and I'm just confused on the reasoning of people's thinking with that. You know, voting is very important, and being pushed out, the reason it is because people are not doing it as much. And if people were constantly doing it, I don't think it would be pushed as much this year as it has been. And also due to the coronavirus, you know, you want to keep people informed. And I'm just scrolling and looking through social media and just seeing how people are reacting to the amount of political attention that it's getting. And I know we're closing in on time, so the question I just want to propose to Mr. Harris and Mr. Biff, if you want to answer, is do you believe that voting is being talked about too much, or do you believe that it is being talked about too little? And do you believe it should be pushed even more going on in the future as it was this year?
Mr. Harris, you want to go first, or?
Yeah, well, voting is important because it the politics in this country touches a lot of people in a lot of ways. But, you know, but you have to be politically savvy, saying that the president isn't the one that's going to affect your everyday life. And if you want to have certain things for your community, you're going to have to stand up. And, you know, even though the process isn't always fair, but that's the only way to get stuff done in your community. And if it wasn't important, people wouldn't be doing so much stuff to stop you from voting. You know, so I've been voting since I was 18. You know, and even now I still do it in absentee ballots. But it's important because we have to have a say in the things that go on, or we can't complain about the things that are happening around us. You know, you gotta the saying was you gotta be in it to win it. And you know, so voting for me, you know, I think it's important, but we need to be smart about what we do and how we do it though.
Right. I would add to that, all politics are local. And I want to add to that, you know, the dominant society pretty much controlled the political atmosphere in local communities and on the federal level as well. And what we found out when we looked back into the past is we had communities, cities, and states that had a dominant amount of black people that can change and shift the power and control. And once, that's why they created poll tests, all kinds of ways to discourage black people from actually being involved in the political and civic process of voting. You know, I'm of the opinion that as long as you can keep people ignorant and off balance to the importance of political activism, you can continue to be in control. And so I think there's definitely a problem. There is definitely voter suppression, and I don't think that we can't talk about it enough. I mean, even in this last presidential election, I've heard black people make statements as if it doesn't matter. Neither one of the candidates are going to do anything for us. Okay? And, you know, that discounts during this political process the questions that were on the ballot that pertain specifically to the state of New Jersey. So if you would have opted out of not participating, you would have not had an opportunity to have an input in what was going on, which is what Mr. Harris just said. You wouldn't have had an opportunity to participate in the decision-making of things that concern the people in the state of New Jersey. And you know, I need to just be honest with you. I've been in back room. I've heard the jokes that they have about black people in vote. Okay? And it's enough to tick anybody off. Okay? And I've heard stuff, Walter, black people don't vote anyway. Oh, yeah, and if it rains, you can count on a whole lot of people not participating. I've heard that. I've been in the room.
Okay.
And you know what the sad part of it was? Some of it was true.
Okay.
Because we have not been educated to the level, I'm not painting with a broad brush, but there are a lot of misconceptions about voting. And I go back to Mr. Harris and his statement, if the voting wasn't that important, they wouldn't be going through all the trouble to suppress the vote, to make, you know, all those lines that you saw in different states and things. You know, they had for thousands of people, they would open up one polling booth, you know. Now, we didn't have to really deal with that situation in our particular area, but there are places around the country that did have to go through that. Now, in some states, let me tell you about the electoral process. There's a state in the United States that put in on their ballot, you have the opportunity to come and cast your vote. You can mark in the spot and says, I don't want to choose either one of the candidates. That is the electoral process, you know, so that you can go vote and actually say, you can cast your vote and say, I don't want neither one of these people. And that's the button, that's the circle that I'm hit, you know. So, but the people in that local community got together and actually had that place on their ballot. And so that is the power of the electoral process. And so, you know, we've gone over, I've gone over, and I say we can't talk about voting enough and being civically responsible to our duties and participating. Okay, so, yeah, as you see, dinner, all right? That was your goal, but mission accomplished. Walter, any response?
You know what? I like that statement. It was very powerful. I felt you getting emotional there at the end. You know, you had to let it all out. I got you. And that's the response. I just liked it. And that's what, you know. I guess that's the reason you felt that. And I'm glad. I'm happy for that response that you gave me. And you know, so we ran out of time, but starting later on in other shows, I just want to just talk a little bit more on this in a deeper level when we have more people available. So we're going to continue this conversation later, but for right now, I just want to thank everybody for tuning in to another edition of Quest Community Vibrations. Quest Youth Radio, again, is the best youth radio.
Okay. I have my people on the line. Quick, give a shout-out. 6778.
Exciting show, gentlemen. Great, as always, great commentary. I really appreciate the fact that that Walter, how he combined what he talked about, two different individuals from the same state. So I think that was really important in keeping and understanding what Georgia was all about and what Georgia meant to this electoral process. So good work, guys. Keep up the great work. Have a great evening.
Thank you. Our number one fan. Last word? Any words? Comments?
Absolutely. Voting is the most powerful aspect of our society. But I do want, since we did bring up Mr. John Lewis, I did again want to read an excerpt from his book, Walking with the Wind. And it's, when I look back on my own life and what I've come through, I can say that it was the prayers of the true believers, the prayers of an involved community of similar minds that made it possible for me to still be here. Sometimes when I look back at the film footage of the civil rights fight and see what happened to me at Selma or on the Freedom Ride, I have to believe that it was the prayer of the faithful that made it possible for some of us to still be here. And as I always say, thank you, John Lewis, and all your comrades for where you brought us to. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. Mr. Harris, we thank you for joining us tonight. We know that you don't always join us on Wednesday, but when you do, it's definitely appreciated. Walter, you are closing the show. I'll give you an opportunity to lock it down, close it up.
Yeah, you know, I hope we can continue this conversation and continue the work that John Lewis wanted everybody to do, which is to love America and to continue the fight for equality.
Okay, will do. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in and listening to A Different Perspective. And until we meet next time, peace. Good night.